You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1. Registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, or 2. Solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor. Integrated Partners and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580, welcome aboard to New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design, starring Dennis Prout, who is not here today, but we have Heidi Cartwright. Good morning, Heidi.
But I'm here today, that's right. Thank you, Ron. It's great to be here, and it's Thursday, March 6th, and I can hardly believe that we're already in March. It seems like things are just racing by, but I'm glad to get closer to spring. I thought we were, but maybe not.
For a second there. Yeah. It looks like it.
So I brought along with me today Nathan Prout, who is an advisor with our firm. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning. It is great to be here today.
Great. And then we also have Beth Shire, our director of marketing. Welcome, Beth.
Good morning.
Our first article comes from Jeffrey Tucker, and he is a writer and publisher economist. So he said there's 2 money portals in every institution, 1 for money coming in and 1 for money going out. Watching these portals reveals cash deficits or surpluses. Thus, analyzing the relevant accounting data is important. And to do this, DOGE, or D-O-G-E, the Department of Government Efficiency, I think it's...
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, all right. So focuses on 2 federal government bodies. The first one is the United States Treasury Payment Systems, and the second is the IRS, where the money goes out and where the money comes in. Tying these 2 together by analyzing the flow of funds using normal accounting methods is the key to eliminating both waste and fraud and verifying what is actually taking place. And a lot of us who work in the private sector, not in government work, this is a normal course of business where you have to track everything, where it comes in and where it goes, so that you can adhere to your budget or make those goals that you put out there for yourself.
So are you saying that you shouldn't spend more than you take in?
That's the theory.
Okay.
That, not and you idea. Should also have track of what you're spending yeah. as well.
Yes. Yeah. So a shocking revelation from the limited look at the U.S. Treasury books indicated that DOGE has discovered $4.7 trillion in government spending that is not tagged with what's called a Treasury Access Symbol, or TAS, which ties specific spending to a specific congressional authorization. So it's just a simple memo line or code that they put in that says the reason we're spending this money goes back to what Congress passed in this law. And that all these expenditures could be legitimate and authorized, but without that TAS tag, there is no way to know. So DOGE has mandated that from now on, all government spending must be tagged with a TAS, so we have a valid and verifiable system of accounting in government. And this, to me, is just a very sound principle in what many of us follow in our daily business lives already. So hopefully this will cut down on some of the confusion out there. Five former secretaries of the Treasury said that it has been 80 years since elected government officials and their appointees have had access to these payment systems. It seems crazy that that amount of time could go by without oversight. Instead, they have been controlled by a small group of civil servants who have walled themselves off from the electorate, and hopefully this will be changed. The reason for the careful DOGE audits is to verify what is true and what is not, which should increase public trust in the federal government. So I thought that was an interesting article and sort of boils it down to some of, hopefully we'll have better principles put in place so that we can have a better idea of how money is coming in and how money is spent. So the article continues and says that Republicans squeaked their budget blueprint through the House late Tuesday after party leaders swayed a handful of wavering members back to the framework for President Trump's tax and border spending cut agenda. So the tax, border, and spending cut agenda. Tuesday's vote is a sign that Republican-controlled Congress might be able to deliver major legislation despite slim majorities in the House and Senate. Still, the path ahead isn't straightforward. Tuesday's vote sets up a conflict with the Senate, which favors larger tax cuts and plans to alter the House plan rather than accept it. That means another nail-biting House budget vote is on the horizon. So we're seeing some of the new Congress's moves towards trying to address some of those critical and vital decisions that have to be made on a timely basis. So then we turn our attention to a different economist. His name is Torsten Slok. He is in charge of the Apollo Global Management Group. And his observations are as follows. Incoming economic data remains strong, but I worry about the downside risks to the economy and markets from, one, the impact of the DOGE layoffs and contract cuts, and two, persistently elevated policy uncertainty weighing on CapEx spending decisions and hiring decisions. And then he goes into more detail by saying the consensus expects total DOGE-related job cuts to be about 300,000 people. Total employment in the United States is 160 million, with 7 million unemployed. About 5 million people change jobs every month. In that context, the 300,000 federal jobs lost is not much, really, when you gives you a little perspective when you see how big that job market is out there. However, studies show that for every federal employee, there are two contractors that are impacted. So as a result, layoffs could potentially be closer to 1 million if you follow that train of thought. So any increase in layoffs will push jobless claims higher over the coming weeks. And such a rise in the unemployment rate is likely to have a negative consequence for rates, equities, and credit. So they're saying it's going to make a disruption within the business economic community. And the bottom line is that the incoming data remains strong, but the near-term downside risks to the economy and markets are growing. And maybe the market today, with all the volatility that we've seen recently, just shows some of that uncertainty, and some of this is going to have to play out before we really know what the impact is going to be. So he continues on that the world has moved from globalization to segmentation. We have gone from a world of globalization where goods were flowing over borders, people were moving across borders, and the rules for businesses were predictable and harmonized across countries. In the new world, economies, markets, and policies are more segmented. Countries have different industrial policies, which have made the rules for businesses more unpredictable and idiosyncratic. the consequence of moving from a global economy to a segmented economy consisting of many separate islands is permanently higher inflation everywhere. So he's talking about as you get more segmented, the push on inflation rises. All right, so there's even a little bit more from the same Mr. Slock, and Doge and tariffs combines are mild temporary shock to the economy that will put a modest upward pressure on inflation and modest downward pressure on the GDP. The bottom line for markets is that this is a modest stagflation shock to the economy, but not a recession. So in this economist's view, yes, we're going to have some turbulence, but he doesn't see it moving us into a recession at this point.
Yeah, just another reason, of course, to keep your longer focus still a part of your picture, you know, like invest in the companies that you believe in the stocks that you think are going to do well within reason, within your risk tolerance and all those sorts of things. And ride out these bumps that we're experiencing right now. You know, even the market's down again today, but we expect that with even the tariff uncertainty that we're seeing as well, too.
Yes, yes, definitely. So let's move and turn the corner, Nathan, maybe, and bring in a new topic now. And another article that we thought was interesting out there is on the cryptomania that is out there. Senator Cynthia Lummis is a Republican from Wyoming, and she is at the forefront of a moment in U.S. Financial policy. As the newly appointed chair of the Senate Banking Subcommittee on Digital Assets, she has a pivotal role in shaping how America approaches cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. This signals Washington's recognition of digital assets as a transformative force. And the reason that I thought this article would be relevant to our audience is, as Nathan and I, we sit with a lot of clients out there. We get a lot of questions about cryptocurrency and the different cryptocurrencies and should I invest in it, and it's a hard topic for people to understand and also know if it's a solid investment. But it has inherent cautions that we give our clients because it is an unregulated sphere of the investment landscape. And so trying to bring forth some of the information that's happening on the regulation and government side will help you know that they are trying to bring this into more of an investment that can be offered over more different platforms. We're limited. Nathan and I are limited as to any kind of investment that we can recommend or put our clients into because of the highly speculative nature of cryptocurrency.
Can you give like a layman's explanation of what cryptocurrency is? I mean, is it an alternative form of currency or what? A lot of people, as you say, don't understand it. A lot of people we read are getting really rich fast. Trump is the president wants to do something with it. What is does, is it physical? Do you is it just in the Ethernet or what is cryptocurrency?
Yeah, it is a purely digital currency, and it is without regulation, which has been one of the main attractions to so many of it, you know, because it doesn't have to flow through a bank, it doesn't have to flow through a government. But as Trump has even hinted at using Bitcoin as part of the strategic reserve too, it's brought in to light that the SEC, mm-hmm. as Heidi was about to get into, might start stepping in to figuring out how to regulate it. But yeah,
but if you invest in it, does it the value goes up and down like a stock?
Oh, it's wildly volatile.
It's highly volatile.
Yeah. So I mean, Bitcoin. I mean, even since the start of this year, you've seen 10-20% swings.
So there was a story today, we've had others, where somebody was scammed and the scammer got this person to go to a bank ATM machine that also is Bitcoin,
mm-hmm.
and I think deposit their real money into the Bitcoin account.
Right.
So that's happening now at ATMs?
Yeah, and the way that the Bitcoin transfer works, too, is it's essentially impossible to track after it leaves your account, too, which is just made another...
It's anonymous. You don't know where it's gone.
So like a stock, I could go online, I could pay $1,000 worth of Bitcoin.
You could, yeah.
There's different brands, right?
Yeah, even if you have something like a Robinhood account on your phone, you can just... You know, you type in BTC and you can buy into Bitcoin directly.
And the value goes up and down every day.
Yeah, based on is that fill in the blank there, right? You know, so really it's purely supply and demand, because what value are you attaching to Bitcoin right now too? Like, obviously traditionally, you know, you invest in a company, you invest in an index, and you can see their earnings, their, you know, all of that. But...
There's no standardization. Right. There's no like certain kind of framework that they work in. So it's very hard to be able to compare and contrast the different cryptocurrencies. And so that brings me to the next part of the article, where it says recently the SEC announced the formation of a new task force dedicated to digital assets. This initiative is a clear sign that the SEC recognizes the pivotal role cryptocurrencies and blockchain technologies will play in the global economy. And so that's why we're welcoming this in the financial world, is because we do want to be able to, compare this one to that one and to be able to find out which one is a best fit for a client that's interested in that. Because right now we are restricted from being able to go down that road. Enter the SEC's new task force led by Commissioner Hester Pierce. This initiative aims to provide clear guidelines for market participants. It is an ambitious plan that includes defining regulatory boundaries, creating feasible pathway for token registration, and crafting disclosure frameworks tailored to digital assets. This shift signals the agency's willingness to engage the crypto community instead of simply policing it. Several forces are converging to make this the perfect time for regulatory clarity. First, the scale of adoption is undeniable. Second, the global competition is heating up. And third, the federal government itself is moving. A recent executive order from President Trump, like Nathan mentioned, established a working group to explore a comprehensive regulatory framework for cryptocurrencies. So it's basically saying cryptocurrency is here to stay. It has value. People are using it extensively, and it's gaining in popularity. So we need to get our hands around it. A U.S. strategic Bitcoin reserve is a policy lever with enormous implications. By leveraging federal resources to hold Bitcoin, the United States could hedge against global economic uncertainties, establish a benchmark for integrating digital assets into national reserves, influence global cryptocurrency markets with a strategic advantage. So cryptocurrency buyers should be prepared for more and bigger threats after North Korea. This is a recent story. I had not heard this until I read this article. North Korea's recent robbery of close to $1.5 billion of cryptocurrency from the crypto exchange Bybit. This is one of the conclusions from a report appearing in the Quarterly Journal of Economics. So
how do you steal something that's digital like that then? They hacked in?
They hacked in. They talk about how they hacked in and they were able to steal that value of cryptocurrency. And so there are risks out there. You know, it's very exciting to see things, and it's the flashy thing going up and down and a lot of movement in the price. But there is a lot of risk associated to owning these. So you want to be able to understand it. The author says that crypto investors should be cautious because cryptocurrency's vulnerability to attack is growing, and there is no shortage of bad actors with incentives to mount such attacks. Research focuses on what it takes to protect crypto from not just hacks like the North Korea hack,
but also from an even more devastating threat, what is known as a majority or a 51% attack. In these more serious attacks, a bad actor would gain control of more than 50% of the crypto network, which in turn could lead to the crypto market's value to plunge or even be wiped out altogether. And Nathan was mentioning before the show, it's like a hostile takeover of that cryptocurrency itself. So just, I thought it was interesting to bring forth, we have the government forces trying to bring in some rules, regulations, frameworks, so we can investigate different kinds of cryptocurrency on a level information field. But at the same time, we have those hostile efforts out there to undermine cryptocurrency or take advantage of it through hacking and this majority attack out there.
So I looked up BTC, like you said, Nathan.
Yeah.
And I got Grayscale Bitcoin Mini Trust ETF, up 69% in the last 6 months.
Yep. Yeah, that's that volatility, you know.
So do you, with any of your clients, I mean, can you say, do you, or you said you don't deal with it at all, right? You can't recommend people do or don't invest, or?
We're restricted on what particular ETFs we can buy, you know. So when a client asks us about it, the first sentence, what you heard in what Heidi said too, is it's a highly speculative investment.
Okay.
So of course, you know, the first questions have to be, what is your risk tolerance?
Mm-hmm.
How much are you thinking? And why? What you know, what's your purpose for it? Is it just because everybody else is doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And then figuring out how much of your portfolio is appropriate to segment to that. Usually it's, if somebody's going to do it, it's 5% or less right now. Obviously, that's not everybody. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But the other thing that we've been recommending, if you do decide to do Bitcoin or Ethereum or these other digital currencies, is to put it in one of your non-qualified accounts. Because, yes, it could go to the moon. But if it doesn't, you may as well be able to claim the losses on your tax return.
All right.
But it's a new thing out there, and everybody should approach it with caution and do your homework and do your research and be willing, go in with the attitude that it's okay if I lose the entire value. Mm-hmm. So it's a, because it's so volatile and it's very speculative.
That's right, yeah.
We had many years ago, a local high school guy, it was probably 10 years ago, came in. He had made a bunch of money because he understood this when it was very new, just emerging.
Right.
And he was talking a foreign language to me. I didn't understand, but he was making a bunch of money.
Yeah, there's people like that tell stories like they couldn't pay their pizza delivery driver, you know, I think it was probably 15 years ago. And so they offered them like 100 Bitcoin because it was worth like nothing at that time.
Yeah.
And they took it and they kept it. And now they don't remember their password to unlock their wallets. Or the ones that can get into it is like, oh, each of those is worth close to $100,000 right now.
Incredible.
You know, so it's crazy.
It's crazy.
So we are a little more than 1 month into President Trump's second term. I don't know if any of you are aware of that. But investors are spinning from one news cycle to the next. So there's higher tariffs to massive cost cutting and other sweeping initiatives. And this article is from Capital Group, or American Funds. So Trump's political goals come with significant investment implications. Center stage are executive orders that will impact companies in a broad range of industries, from aerospace and defense to industrials and banking. Waiting in the wings are year-end expirations of major provisions of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and expanded funding under the Affordable Care Act. So we're seeing, obviously, individual sector pressure as well. So right now, for instance, the outlook for aerospace and defense is unfortunately up because of increased foreign and domestic defense spending. Banking, the outlook is also up right now because of fewer regulations and lower capital requirements. But then you get to some other sectors that could go either way, like healthcare, renewable energy, even semiconductors. So for instance, with semiconductors, lower input costs, but there's also the risk of oversupply. I think we were seeing just this morning actually, that Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing
is
going to be building a massive new plant in Arizona. It was like $100 billion venture or something like that.
Which is amazing. Yeah. I mean, just the numbers that are out there on the investment. Yeah.
Yep. So getting into that, America First brings manufacturing to the forefront. So President Trump's term may signal a philosophical pivot from free trade to protectionism. That means tariffs and other trade barriers are likely here to stay. An America First policy aims to increase manufacturing jobs. So there's an urge to regrow the manufacturing base the United States established in the 1950s and 60s, says economist Jared Franz. Beneficiaries may include construction and industrial companies tied to the build-out of data centers, autos, and pharmaceuticals. For example, Caterpillar could see an increase in demand for its construction equipment, and Carrier Global's heating and cooling system could also benefit. But it's not just companies based in the U.S. that are taking part in this industrial renaissance. Looking forward, more companies may emulate Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company and Siemens by establishing operations in the United States to access the U.S. market. So the United States' enviable economy could likely withstand some bumps, likely, in the road related to tariffs and immigration, as many of the impacts are targeted and hyper-local to a region or industry. For example, certain industries that rely heavily on immigration, such as home builders, could face labor shortages, which would lead to higher costs. Next, deregulation could accelerate innovation. A new era of deregulation is expected to have sweeping impacts on the economy. Valuations are likely to rise and fall as investors digest the sometimes contradictory signals of tariffs and a looser regulatory environment. Trump policies could accelerate innovation across artificial intelligence and possibly even the pockets of healthcare, such as stem cell research, which is of interest to the new Secretary of Health and Human Services, says Rich Wolf, portfolio manager of the New Economy Fund with American Funds. Within AI, society could soon see a significant increase in robotics across commercial, residential, and consumer sectors. Boston Dynamics, for example, creates robots for the military, commercial, and research applications. And I know we visited this a few radio shows ago, but investors tend to underestimate the long-term impact of new technology. So, for instance, the initial forecast for personal computer users in 2000 was 225 million, and the actual number of PC users in 2000 was 354 million, or an underestimation of 36%. Smartphones. Shipments in 2013, initial forecast, 657 million. Actual, just north of 1 billion. Another 36% underestimation.
So they're not getting very accurate estimations here.
They're not. But all the numbers we've been mentioning so far are in the millions or low billions. And this one is really interesting. So AI market size, the initial forecast is 1.8 trillion dollars. Who knows what the actual will be, but if it's an underestimation, AI could be a prudent spot to potentially invest right now if it matches your risk portfolio and your goals for retirement.
So somebody texted, everything, all caps, is speculative.
Settle down.
No one can predict the future with 100% certainty. We just try one's best to qualify our investments backed with factual information. My personal input is to not invest or de-invest based on your emotional position.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. And so that comes back to keeping your long-term goals in mind, keeping, you know, answer the, even some might argue, more important questions of what you want to accomplish in your retirement, what you want to do, where you want, like, if you want to travel, do you want to see grandkids, do you want to get an RV, whatever it might be. And then figure out how to set up your investment portfolio, too. And it comes, you can use, many people find, like, the bucketing strategy very helpful. So where is my next 1 to 5 years of income going to come from? And then obviously those would be your most more conservative investments. And then 6 to 10, and then 11 to 15, so on and so forth. And then when you start seeing those fluctuations, you can stay invested, hopefully, is the goal for the long term. Because the money that, ideally, the only money that's fluctuating is money that you don't need for more than 10 years.
Good advice.
And then, so another point that they make is to look to high-grade bonds for stable income opportunities. We're not going to get too much into that, but with the evolving mix of tariff and immigration policies, things that has created market uncertainty, as we've seen. So given the strength of the U.S. economy, confidence that the Federal Reserve will lower interest rates this year has declined. You can go either way on that, because there's more than one thing that affects what the feds are going to do. As the previous texter just noted, everything is speculative.
And sometimes the Fed says they're going to do something, and then they end up doing something different.
Yeah, so if you can imagine a world like that. Bonds are a compelling diversifier relative to cash and equities. Short and intermediate maturity treasuries currently have attractive yields that largely price in the potential for sticker inflation and higher federal fund rates for longer. They also offer upside potential if we enter an environment where growth disappoints. In that scenario, treasury yields may begin to fall, which would boost bond prices. So those have an inverse relationship. So President Trump has implemented several policy changes that are likely to have lasting and complicated impacts on society and businesses. There is a risk these policies could have unintended consequences, and investors should be mindful of valuations amid the potential for heightened volatility. Given high valuations and big gains in stocks over the past 2 years, it's worth checking your risk tolerance against your portfolio holdings. The investing world of the last few decades is fundamentally changing, but that doesn't make things better or worse. It just raises uncertainty. If there's one thing I'm reminded of, though, it's that markets and economies have shown resilience and continue to evolve and adapt, says Franz with Capital Group. So we did have a texter send us a statement here. He said that interest rates are coming down without the Fed right now. He believes the Fed will be forced to lower. 10-year note interest rates are down measurably in just the last 2 months. So he believes that pressure is going to force the Fed to lower, not just, you know, unemployment reports and things like that. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. All right. Do we have some stats, Beth?
We sure do, Nathan. Thank you. So I came across this story, and it was really inspirational and great, and I thought it'd be a fun one to share on the air. So it's a man with a golden arm. That's what Australians call James Harrison. He donated blood and plasma over 1,000 times. He never missed an appointment. He passed away peacefully in his sleep last month at 88. And wow. His plasma, this is the interesting part, had a rare antibody to prevent rhesus disease. And that's when a pregnant mother's blood is incompatible with her baby, and her body essentially attacks the baby. And he is credited with saving over 2 million babies' lives.
Jeez.
Wow.
Talk
that's
about
amazing.
A legacy. Isn't that amazing?
That's a wonderful story.
Yeah. So moving on, bring it back home. Apple announced its plans to invest $500 billion in U.S. facilities as a 10% tariff on Chinese imports looms. Currently, Apple assembles a majority of its products in China, but parts are still produced in the U.S. Apple plans to build a new 250,000 square foot facility in Houston by 2026, which is next year, and that's by Reuters. And shrinking staff. On Thursday, February 20th, 6,000 IRS employees were fired, which represents about 6% of the total workforce. This comes just weeks after the IRS e-file for the 2025 tax season kicked off on January 27th of this year. That's also from Reuters. What's going on? Microsoft has announced the cancellation of leases for U.S. data centers amid concerns about over projected capacity needs. Microsoft confirmed that it still plans to spend $80 billion on infrastructure during the next fiscal year. This comes days after Majorana. One, excuse me, I actually had to Google that one. a new processor which could transform quantum computing, and that's from Yahoo Finances. And then the last one, wrapping up, ranking real issues. A study conducted by the Pew Research Center found that 72% of surveyed individuals believe that the role of money in politics is a major economic issue. And the affordability of health care and inflation were also close behind at 67% and 63%, respectively. And that's from Pew Research Center. And those are the stats for today.
Very interesting.
Yeah. I'm surprised health care was not number one concern.
Yeah. Yeah, that's in some of the financial planning software we use. Like, you see the normal rate of inflation, and they predict that at around 2.5 to 3%, and then healthcare they estimate 5.5, 6, and 7% because they just go off of historical numbers.
Mm-hmm. Somebody texted; they want to know. I don't know if you know the answer. Are Bitcoin profits taxable?
It depends on the type of account that you hold them in. So, for instance, if you bought Bitcoin in your Roth, it would not be, which is wild. Bitcoin in your IRA, anything that you distribute from that, assuming you're over age 59 and a half, in which case you wouldn't have to pay that 10% penalty, similar to the Roth as far as that age goes, would be taxable to you. So that whole account just remains taxable is sort of the way to view that. And then the non-qualified account, if you have it in there, then yes, that would be taxable as you liquidate it and have to declare those gains. And a short-term gain is anything that you've held for less than 1 year, and a long-term gain would be anything over that. And then you can see the long-term capital gains rates are far more favorable than the normal income tax rates. So,
what's a non-qualified account?
Like a bank account is sort of the way to think of that, but like an account that's not an IRA or a Roth, really, or a defined benefit plan and some other outliers.
Like to call it regular money. Yeah. So if it's non-qualified, it means that it's like regular money, like Nathan said, in your bank account, a joint account, a trust account.
Money that you've paid tax on once.
Right. And then there's qualified accounts, and those are your IRAs, your Roths.
Retirement accounts.
SEP accounts, simple accounts. Yeah. Right. And the reason it's said that way, because they qualify for special rules, is a way you could think of it. So if it's qualifying, it means there's a lot of rules to get the money in and out. If it's non-qualified, that means it's regular money.
There's still some rules, but not as many.
Not as many, but there are still rules. But that's the way I always try to keep in mind which one's non-qualified and which one's qualified.
Mm-hmm. It's always amazing. You can have this much money and you can put it in this account, and it's completely different than if you have this much money and put it in that account. Mm-hmm. Or if you sign this page, but you don't sign that page. There's so many rules that differ.
I mean,
for
just
someone under the same conditions.
Absolutely. And just almost, not quite, but almost to the same extent that you diversify your holdings and the companies that you buy and all of that, it's important to diversify your account types too, because each one of them can accomplish a different thing for you in your retirement.
And it's the registration of the account that's going to tell you how it's taxed versus the assets within the account. So really that registration is going to tell you what the tax rules that go along with that account are.
As always, if you want to talk to a professional at Prout Financial Design, you guys will take appointments for the first meeting.
Yeah, yes, the first meeting is complimentary. Our number is 231-947-3992.
All righty, that'll wrap it up for this week's New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design. Thank you, Heidi Cartwright, Nathan Prout, and Beth Shire.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.